I turned it way up because I was doing Rose the other day.
Rose Garrett?
Yeah, Rose.
Rose Point?
Rose Point, yeah. She's
got
quiet.
Such a soft voice.
Yeah.
Really. I'm the other end of the scale.
Yeah, that's good. Excellent.
Right. I'm the oldest of 10, and if you didn't have a loud voice, you never got heard.
I guessed. Okay, so what I'm going to do is, when canoes made by them, or was it just bought somewhere?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, they did purchase a couple of them, but they also built them themselves and made their own. Because I can remember, still remember, going next, well, two doors down from here, there was a longhouse right on this side. And they were making a canoe there, and they were still doing it the old way, where they had water and hot rocks, and they were spreading the canoe.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so.
Oh, you can remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And what did your parents do?
My mother raised 10 children.
Yeah, that was enough to keep her busy, yeah.
My dad was the chief in the community for a while, and then he was the first band manager that we ever had.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So my uncle, John, was the first elected chief here. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a chief, one of the elected chiefs. Mm-hmm. My dad was. Mm-hmm. I was. Mm-hmm. My sister was. Yeah.
That's great. So you really charted new territory. Now, was it unusual for a woman to be a chief?
No, we had an elected woman as chief probably 10, 15 years before me. Gertrude Garrett. Yeah, was the first elected chief.
We have some material on her. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, now I'm trying to find out the background of a Musqueam way of educating young people and so on. And I understand it's by individual counsel, is that correct? Pretty well original, traditional way?
It is and it isn't. Mm-hmm. You very much were taught individually by the people in your family, but what happened to a large degree is that the whole community educated one child. Mm. In that the aunts and uncles and the extended family had a responsibility to ensure that the child was following the kind of path that had been chosen for him or her. Mm-hmm. And so there was continual guidance being given, even if you were walking the street. I can remember old people talking to you, stopping you and talking to you about what you were doing. A lot of importance on making the child feel a part of the community, no matter how young you were. And I remember it very clearly. All of the elders that are gone now, I can tell you different stories about how they would stop me and talk with me about, maybe I was picking flowers. I remember one old woman when I was picking flowers and talking to me about what the flowers meant and how important it was to do what I was doing, which was to pick the different flowers, identify them, your family, my father and my grandfather and my grandmother were very much a part of teaching me and handing on the knowledge, but the whole community did that. And so it very much was a community responsibility to ensure that the values of the community were passed on to all the children,
just their own. Right?
And I think it was a much better education system because you got a more broad perspective. The way I see it now, where it's the singular family with mother, father, and children, and to a large degree grandparents, but not as much as I think it should be, you become, in my opinion, you become very focused and very limited in your awareness of what one singular issue would be. Because if you have everyone in the community, if you have all your aunts and uncles, you have all your extended family, your uncle, your cousins, and all the rest of it, talking to you about that, you get to see different perspectives from different people. Then you start to learn how to analyze and how to pull things out that best meets the need of what you are developing as an individual. Because I don't think any one of them ever said to me, what I'm telling you is the right way. What I'm saying is the way you have to follow. They were just offering you guidance that would let you see things from a very wide perspective. And I think the teaching that way helps the child to become more independent faster, because you do have the respect of being able to say, unless you cross the line, there's very clearly a line that you can't go over as far as respect for elders or for your family. And pretty well everybody would say the same thing anyway, right? But that broad kind of education of the children being responsibility of everyone really gives you a very strong foundation in understanding your world around you from all different ways of looking at it. You know,
and you feel as an important person, part of the community, in other words, you just know.
So much. And I look at what's happened now in our community, and that part of our values and teachings are really secondary now. And I see the result in the children, you know, and it's really sad.
It
really is sad, yeah.
Very tough. Yeah, I interviewed Andrew Charles, so that
sweetheart.
Was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I got a lot of respect for Andrew.
Yeah, he's really something else. Yeah, I'm told about how if somebody were out of line at a public meeting that they would just stop everything and concentrate absolutely on that incident and
that's
try
right.
to get it straightened out.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and there, you know, the teaching that I hold so dear to me about, that shows me the cultural value and the really, I think, the core of who we are as Musqueam people is something that every time you walk into the longhouse, one of the first things the speaker will say is that if you have any hard feelings towards anybody, you leave them outside. And when you're in here, you show respect and love and appreciation for everybody, no matter who they are, no matter what, you know. And then if you want to continue outside, you do that, but don't bring it in here, because this is a place of really support and caring. What I take from that is that traditionally, the whole environment of the longhouse, the whole environment of the community, the whole environment of the nation was that way. And then what's happened as we've evolved, it has been contained into the longhouse instead of being a part of the overall value system of the community.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, very much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still is to a degree in the longhouse, where if there's something that happens, some misstep by someone, they will ensure before you go home that they've taken care of that so that it's not left for some other time to be addressed. And I think the teaching system of our community is something that the greater society would really learn a lot if they spent some time really understanding. You know, I've been a politician for most of my life, and dealing with people from the non-Aboriginal community, and business people, not just politicians, they always say, it's so frustrating dealing with First Nations because you take so long to do something. But when you really understand what's going on, you'll find that the time that's taken is well worth it, because what you're doing is giving the respect to every person, that what they're saying and what they're thinking and what they're feeling is important to the outcome. And in order to do that, you have to take extended periods to communicate with each other. And it's not about talking at one another. This is another very big lesson. It's about listening. And it's about listening to a different degree. There's a difference between listening and hearing. And it's a skill that you are taught very young about. When you're listening to someone, you really open your ears. And you hear that lesson all the time. Open your ears. And what you're doing is shutting your mind down. I watch people in meetings now or in discussion. Most of the time, they're trying to answer what that person said before that person's finished. They're not giving the respect to that person of listening 100%, really hearing what that person is saying and letting it digest. Then get your response if a response is needed. So half of what any person is saying, in my opinion, gets lost because the person who's on the receiving end is really shutting them out and starting to address their argument or their response. In our community, from when I was growing up, that didn't take place. People were given the respect of really every individual was listened to and heard, and then the response would come. And I think because it takes so long to do that, people think that we don't want to come to decision, when in fact we want to come to a decision that is much more supported by everyone in the room, that you won't have repercussions later if somebody's saying, well, I don't really support that because I didn't get my opinion heard. Everybody gets an opportunity. I think it's very much about how a collective operates in respecting and honoring the individual's place within that collective. It's not about a charter of rights and freedoms. It's not about the individualism that we hear in the Westminster model of government that we have right now. What it really is about is that the collective is only as strong as the individual within it. And the individual is only as strong in the community as the collective supports the position within the collective. So the collective doesn't hold the individual hostage, but the individual does not stop the growth of the collective because of their one particular viewpoint.
That sounds wonderful.
It is an amazing, great. I think it's an
philosophy.
amazing philosophy.
It would really change a lot of our meetings.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's just wonderful. So, who do you consider was your greatest mentor, or were there several that you really turned to?
There were a couple, and as I grew, changed. While I was growing up, my grandfather and my father were my real teachers, guide, and there were a couple of elders, Bobby Roberts and Ethel Roberts, who really treated me like one of their children, and really, and as I grew, there were a number of elders as I got into my adulthood, and it was really my ex-husband's family, the elders of his family, the Grant family, which was Agnes Grant, Edna Grant, two women who were very strong. They weren't vocal, they weren't, you know, out there, but they were very strong in the teaching inside the home, so they were very much a part of my adult life. I lost my father when I was 18. So my mother raised 10 of us, all of them the age of 18 from the time she was 38. And then as I became more involved in politics, then once again my grandfather again became very much a part of guidance.
So, now, are you a mentor now to another person, a younger person? Because you live up here and not in contact with them so much, or what?
No, I, for the past 5 years, I've been working with the Department of Indian Affairs, and I've just left them. Mm. And I've come back to, I'm now on council again.
Okay.
So I don't have any individual person, mm-hmm. but what I'm trying to do is to create an environment very much like what I grew up in, or I'm hoping that we can move towards that. Andrew's involved in it, and others, you know, where we're trying to revitalize the idea of community families, and I think as far as mentoring, I think we have a responsibility to mentor all the children, you know, and do as much as we can to guide all of the children in their goals and aspirations.
Yeah, that's now, I wanted to ask maybe a controversial question. How are gay and lesbians treated in the community? Is there any special treatment or no prejudice? Or
you know, that's another, I think, very special gift that we have in our society, that people who are called different, mm-hmm. whether it's gay and lesbian, whether it's children, or whether it's people with disabilities, or anyone that has any kind of physical difference, are not treated in any way, not different. I'm not going to say special.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example. We have, so gay and lesbians in particular, no, there is no prejudice towards them. They're very much supported and very much a part of the community, and their lifestyle is something that is really not even talked about, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. As being something of concern. But there's a young man in our community that was born with a hearing. I guess he's deaf. Mm. I don't know if he's deaf completely. I think he's starting now to be able to, in the last few years, to be able to try and speak. Mm. But when we were younger, he wanted to play basketball. And in order to play basketball, you have to be able to hear what's going on, and you know, as well as see. But you know that team came together, and they had special sessions where they each took time to spend in an office in the gym, showing him all the plays and helping him because he couldn't hear, mm-hmm. and showing him what he had to do when at different times. So I really appreciate my community in that sense. You know, they don't judge people's worth by whether or not they are looked at as being complete in their physical form, mm-hmm. or even in any other form. So mm-hmm.
yeah,
no prejudice in that sense at all.
That's great. What about the youth today? And I hear from Constable Fanning that there's 70% unemployment and everything. Is there a reason for that?
I think there's a number of reasons. The first one being the lack of success in education. You need to have a good education in order to get a job where you feel like you're being fulfilled in your own goals. I do not believe that our children are any less intelligent. What I believe has happened is that because of the disconnect from the cultural base of who we are, there is a feeling of not being a part of what the overall society has to offer in an education system. And you'll find that a lot of the parents do not become involved to the degree that the non-Aboriginal community does because they don't see how that makes any difference in their life. A lot of it has to do with residential schools. My generation was the first one allowed to go to non-Aboriginal schools. My generation was the first ones that went to Southland. Everybody else had to go to residential school.
Yeah.
So there's a whole disconnect of a number of generations through the connection of what your responsibility is as a parent when your children are being schooled. And how do you learn how to be a parent? You learn it from your parents. So the passing down of the kind of teachings of that hasn't really gelled in our community to the degree that it helps the children when they're in school. So we find that our children go out of elementary school into grade 8 with an average about a grade 5 reading level. So of course they're not going to succeed. There's been a number of studies done on economic development, why we don't have a lot of people in business. There's been a number of studies done on the socioeconomic indicators of why we have the statistics we do. All of the studies that I've read come to one basic conclusion. In order to have a successful, healthy individual in our communities, you have to have a strong grounding in the cultural reality of who you are. Then you're able to go out and succeed, whether it's in education, whether it's in business, whether it's in any of the other areas that we feel are indicators to show that we are healthy, productive individuals. So the economic condition and the social condition of our community comes from very much the disconnect, and that we can look at all the situations that have happened over the last 100 years as to why. When we did a research study in Musqueam, it wasn't a detailed one, but we just generally looked at when did we stop having employment and what were those factors. We had almost 100% employment until the early 1950s. At that point, it dropped dramatically till we now have 70% unemployment. There were a couple of things that happened at that time. The Department of Indian Affairs came in and started to deliver programs that took away the person's individual feeling of contribution to their future and their connection with that future. And then you started to see SA, social assistance, being introduced. You started to see different kinds of government programs. And the whole community feeling of helping one another to survive started to go down. And unemployment and the inability for people to feel productive started to go up. So we've got a lot of work to do, but I think the key to it is finding those cultural values again that make us who we are and incorporating them into all of the things that we do on a daily basis.
Sounds perfect. Very logical. Oh, gosh, it's tough. Well, I was talking with Erla at Point Grey, and she said there's really going to be a big graduating class next year. 9 or 10 are going to graduate.
Good.
With university level.
My son just graduated from university this last year.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
In political science.
He's going back and taking law.
Oh, good.
Or he's
going to
write his whatever they call them.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. Valerie Jerome said she had him in.
She did. That's right. Wait. You should tell her that he graduated this last year and he's going to go into law next year.
Oh, is that wonderful? Yeah, she'll be so pleased.
Yeah, all my children graduated.
Oh, good for you. So tell me, you went to Southlands. What was it like? Did you go in 1952 when they first opened?
Yep. 52. Let me see. I went to what they called the little school, grade 1, 2.
At the annex.
Then I went to grade 3 at the big school.
Got
to walk down the street to the big school.
That's right. Valerie was saying that you mentioned that you had to, that the Musqueam kids had to line up in separate.
Yes, they did. Can I just get this phone?
Sure.
If you want to turn
that's a nice
off.
Phone. Sure.
the little school had, as you came up Crown Street, right the corner was the playground,
I
right?
I remember that, yeah.
And there was an entranceway here, and there was one over here. And when I came up, I was really frightened and really confused and didn't know where to go. And for some reason, I don't know why, I went over to this entrance.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember it.
Yeah.
I remember the name of the girl who said it to me, and I'm not going to tell you who it is in case they're still around. And I started walking in, and she came behind me, and she said, Indians aren't allowed in this. You have to go in the other entrance. So that was my first...
What a lovely first date.
Yeah,
oh,
that was
God.
My first date by myself because my mother had brought me the first date, right?
Oh,
so this
dear.
Was my first day walking by myself.
Oh, dear. In those days, everybody walked by themselves, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was never any...
I thought I turned it off.
Oh, well.
My goodness. Just send them this...
Get in line.
Okay, so where were we?
Okay, where were we? Yeah, the employment situation, I think we were talking about. And
then you asked me about my first day of school.
Yeah, that's right. And so that wasn't such a good thing. So when did that change? When did you stop having to line up separately?
Oh, well, we didn't really have to line up separately. It was the perception. It was the feeling of the children, other children, about who we were.
Oh, yeah.
We weren't getting instruction from the teachers that we had to do that. It was what the other children felt about us. And that didn't really change. I don't think it's even changed to today, and I'll tell you why. I can give you examples through my elementary school, right through my high school, through to today, where people's feelings about who we are have a lot of undertones of ignorance that really breed racism.
Yeah.
And it's a type of racism that's really hard to deal with because people deny that they have these feelings about who we are. But if you think of the story that I told you earlier, where this woman who's third generation in Vancouver but doesn't know we exist, that to me is a form of ignorance that's really unacceptable.
That's right.
But you have that happening all the time. And so when we talk about education too, if a child doesn't feel comfortable, doesn't feel accepted, doesn't feel a part, it's very difficult to learn. It's very difficult to start to absorb what's being taught to you when you just don't see the relativity of it because of how you're feeling just sitting in the classroom. I can remember when I was in grade 10, when I was 10 years old in grade 4. I used to go home at night, and I know this because I can relate it to other, I know the time period because I relate it to who I was in class with and the kinds of things that were going on. And I used to cry, and I used to think about, I had this dream. That, and already at the age of 10, I understood what land claims were about. That, you know, people had come here and there was still an issue of settling land claims. And I remember thinking, those people who have treated me mean are really going to pay, because when they have to go back home, I'm going to be able to stand there and tell them which ones were nice to me and could stay, and which ones weren't and had to get on a boat and go back home.
Yeah.
That's a pretty telling thing for a 10-year-old to be thinking about. It
right.
really is. So you know how you felt. I can remember around those years being invited by one young woman to go home to her place. I got to her house. Her mother came to the door and said, "We don't have your like here. Go home." Yes.
Oh, I can't
yes.
believe it.
Yes.
That
My mother
terrible.
Still talks about it. So, you know, and that type of underlying feeling about who we are carried over into high school, and to a large degree my youngest son graduated 3 years ago. He would have been about grade 10, I guess 11, something like that, when there was a really hot issue going on in the province, and people were talking about it, and it had to do with the piece of land we're sitting on right now. And so a lot of people were talking about it, and they were making some very negative comments about us. And my son always had a lot of friends from off reserve, and he was at one of the homes, probably not very far from where you live, and they were sitting outside in the yard, him and his friends, under a tree, and the parents were sitting on the patio, and they were saying some very, very negative comments about us down here.
Mm-hmm.
And my son looks Oriental, because his father is quarter half Chinese.
But they knew.
So he walked upstairs, and he said, "Excuse me, do you know I'm from Musqueam?" And they looked at him and they said, "We don't care, because that's how we feel." So this is not that long ago. This is like, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So all these things are compounded now. You know, the issues about how we manage our land and all the rest of it continues that feeling of separation between the two communities because of, I think, of an underlying ignorance, I'll say again, about who we are, what our goals and aspirations are, what our dreams are for our children, the kinds of lifestyle that we live that may not fit in with the upper middle class's idea of success off of reserve, but very much are a part of a success for our community, which is, to me, just as legitimate.
Oh, of course.
Just as legitimate. But we don't get that respect from the other side about it, you know. It is. I think it's really terrible.
It's awful. I felt, in a way, that maybe the closing of the shipyards was a big blow to the community, too, because so many people were employed there.
Yeah.
That must have been quite annoying.
It was. Yeah.
I don't know what the answer to all this is either. I'm hoping that this book and this little section I have on Muskie will start to educate people about what it's like down there. And, yeah, and in a way it's gotten worse. I feel when my kids were going to Southlands, we were down at the reserve all the time, you know, and the kids were playing with each other, and there wasn't any, and I think we had somebody up at our house once even.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem that way anymore. I may be wrong.
I think there's a bit of it, but I certainly think that it's not anywhere near enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of it has to do with the protectiveness that we've developed about who we are. And I think that's justifiable as well, because if you look at the relationship between non-Aboriginal people and ourselves for so long, everything that we've had and held sacred to ourselves has either been ridiculed, outlawed, or, you know, some kind of disdain put on it. So, of course, we become very protective of what we have and become very protective of our lifestyle and don't want to share. But I think we have to come to that place of being courageous enough to say, just a minute, you know, we do have a value system. We do have things that we have in our community that probably could be very much shared with the outside and be a contributing factor to some positive things that are happening in general society. So I think we're looking ourselves. There's a group of us, of which Andrew's a part, that are looking at writing the history of who we are, telling our story, you know, so that people will get a little bit better understanding of who the Musqueam people are and what they want and where they've come from.
Sure, that's great. Now, do you know, we were talking with Andrew, and he was telling me about spirit dancing and mask dancing and all these things and warrior dancing, and I'm wondering if you can explain it to me. We didn't have much time, if you know much about it, or...
Well, you know, I do, but I don't want to speak about it.
I think
that comes from people like Andrew, who are the elders, and because the spirit dancing and the others are, especially the what they call spirit dancing, is so personal and
like
so
personal,
that's
all I needed to know. That is completely personal.
But it's something that I think the outside community should know this much about, that the way that we conduct our spiritual practices still, in this day and age, need to be respected to the degree that a part of that has to do with ceremonies that we do in what is called the University Endowment or the Pacific Spirit Park. But people don't honor that, you know, and they don't understand that there are still ceremonies that go on at daybreak and there are things that happen. Mind you, they don't know a lot about it, but they should know that some areas are really, really sacred to us and really need to be. I recall when we still have a court case against Pacific Spirit Park, because if you know the history of the land claims and the set-aside of reserves, one of the things that they said when they came through and allocated reserves, because we were very much land poor compared to other communities, we got a small land base, but what they said to us was, you will always have access to this piece of property. You will always be able to use it as you do now. So that's why we're fighting so hard for it. And when the province turns around and hands it, as they did, to the city of Vancouver, what they did, in fact, was to alienate our use of it based on our understanding from, you know, the time of the reserve allocations. So when we went to court to try and get an injunction, the lawyers for the other side said, we understand the land claim that Musqueam has, and we want people to know that we will respect it, and that, in fact, Musqueam should be happy that they'll get the land, if they win it, they will get the land back in better shape, because we'll have put parks in, we'll have put trails in, we'll have put parking lot, tennis courts.
Oh, yeah.
And so they'll get it back in a better shape. And
That's terrible.
It is. I just thought, and I wonder...
No idea of spirituality.
And I wonder how many of the citizens of the Dunbar Point Grey area would put up with the kind of treatment that we've had with respect to our understanding of ownership of land.
Yeah.
None of them. Yeah. None of them would accept the behavior of the province or the federal government as it stands now. Mm-hmm. Because, in fact, the provincial government knew exactly what they were doing when they took the land that they had, which is called the University Endowment Land, and handed it over to the city. They, in fact, on a legal side, made it that much more difficult for us to access the land. But even on a personal level, you think about how many citizens now of the city of Vancouver use Pacific Spirit Park. Do you think they're going to let it go and let us have it back?
Yeah, right.
Going to be very difficult.
Ironically, the locals don't use it as much as the outsiders. They come in their cars, their SUVs, and bring their bicycles and stuff like that. And it's 5% of the
really?
Use is from locals, yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is.
So, So, you know anything about the Shakers? Is this what I'm wondering?
I know very little about it, but I have a lot of respect for them.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember from the time I was very, very young, watching them, hearing them. And I think that they have a special place in our community. We have, I don't think we have very many of them now mm-hmm. in our community, but there was a lot when I was growing up, and they're a very strong support from the other members of the community, even if they didn't belong to the Shaker religion.
Mm-hmm. And Slahil, yeah, what is it?
It's a bone game, yeah. It's a betting game. It's a gambling.
And
I can remember growing up listening to them play all night long. Out in the field in front of this house.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Because it was still very, very much practiced by everybody. You know, they all were involved. And it's exciting because they still carry on. There's a number of people that play in our community. Mm-hmm. They go from community to community right throughout the whole nation having tournaments. They have tournaments all over.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Now, I saw a picture that Rose showed me. They had girls playing it. I thought it was a men's game.
No.
You didn't?
For everybody.
Everybody. Huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that neat? Do they play together or all mixed up?
All mixed up.
Yeah. That's great.
See, there's a misconception that women don't have a role.
Of women. I have pictures of men. So I don't
but there's a misconception by a lot of people that women don't have an equal role in our communities, when in fact it's the opposite. Women have a very strong role in our communities, very much a part of the decision-making, very much a part of the setting the goals for where the community is going to go and directing it. We are a matriarchal society.
That's amazing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, now something we can put into our book. Yes, banish the old myths.
Yes.
I don't know if you know, but we had a visioning exercise, quote unquote, with the city planners coming to Dunbar, and we had workshops.
I remember it.
Yeah,
we
had
workshops.
It was a workshop on South Dunbar area, the business district, and it was voiced at that workshop that the Musqueam should have a presence there, that there should be some way to recognize that there's something down here on the point, you know. And I don't know if that. Possible to bring up that thing in the planning conversation again, or if you feel it would have validity to maybe establish decorations or a room where people could come and chat and hang out. Do you know if they would ever come up again? There used to be, according to Andrew, people would gather at Gus's and but there isn't any place like that up there now.
No, there isn't.
No. There used to be a newspaper shack where people could go and hang out. There's nothing.
Well, why don't you start one?
I would, but I don't. Yeah, I wish I were younger. Entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think? Hamburger joint? We need another restaurant.
We do, don't we?
Yeah, we have this Chinese one that everybody hates to go into because it's got these bright tongues of lights. And
oh, does it? I haven't been in there since it used to be a nice restaurant. Yeah, I used to go in there.
Yeah.
But I haven't been there for years.
Yeah.
I think there should be a gathering place where people just can sit down and, you know, maybe we need a... I don't want a Starbucks or anything because Starbucks is kind of...
It's corporation.
But just a community. A community feel. Yeah.
That's right.
So if there's some young entrepreneur out there, you know,
even in Mustang. Get them something to do, boy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess we should talk about that. Sure. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep the conversation going.
So. Yeah.
Because I noticed there's a new development coming up at 5621 Dunbar. And it's going to be offices and dwellings, but not any residents or anything like that. But, that's, you know, probably the first of a series of things that they want to put in there. So, okay, we'll bring it up. And pretty well. The only thing I haven't got from you is maybe if you know people. Know what's going on in the schools here on the reserve. I mean, there's daycare, there's preschool or something, isn't there? And an adult education
center.
Yep. Adult learning center, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, can you explain any of those?
No, I'm sorry. I'm just getting back into the community, so I don't know much about the programs at all.
I see, I'll see if Faye knows anything.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. That's probably about it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great. You got a lot. So what I do with
a student until she got to grade 4, and all of a sudden, she's failing in reading. So I go to this, parent-teacher, and I said, what is going on here? So the teacher starts to give me all these explanations about what I wasn't doing for my daughter and all the rest of it, And I looked at her, and I said, I don't understand this. If there was an issue and a problem, I think I should have known about it before she got to grade 4. And, I went through all of this, and she looked at me and she said, I have been teaching here for 15 years, and I want you to know that Indian children cannot read.
Oh, my God.
And I just went straight up.
I'll bet you
did. I went straight up, and I thought, that's it. We don't need teachers like this in this school.
That's right.
So lo and behold, my daughter did go through and graduate, and she did a year of university, but then became a mother.
And
I hope to God that teacher was not teaching anywhere else when she left South Bend that had any minority children.
Oh, God, I hope not.
So, there you go.
There you go, yes. Thank you.